philosophy.
It's funny, even telling you this story now, it seems so obvious. Why didn't someone do this before? It's so rich. Even the whole concept of the fact that, yeah, they're buddies, but on the other hand, this guy is being paid to be there. And he's being paid to do all the things the actor supposedly does. But he really risks his life doing this. And also, he's being paid to be his friend. He's paid to be on set and to talk to him and help him out and maybe run lines with him. This quote is from Quentin Tarantino in a Q&A he did called Quentin Tarantino Digs Deep on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as he fears Dark Night of the Soul for Filmmakers Q&A by Joe Uticci of Deadline.com.
Welcome to Coffeelosophy,
where we caffeinate
and pontificate. My name is Chris.
And I'm Sarah.
And today I'm drinking Café Zino, which is a Nespresso blend that I have. It is a Brazilian coffee.
I am done with coffee for the day. And
okay.
I need a nap.
That's a fine answer.
Yes. But yeah, today we're going to be talking about Quentin Tarantino, most specifically his recent movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which yes. When we first talked about Quentin Tarantino, I was not on board. I'm not a huge Quentin Tarantino fan. And when I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I thought it was the only Tarantino movie I'd ever seen. But I actually saw Django Unchained many years ago, and I forgot how much I enjoyed that movie and loved the soundtrack to it specifically. It's like a spaghetti western that has all of these Italian songs in it. It's really good.
Oh, yeah. I did see that too. That was a long time ago, though. I did see that in theaters also.
Yeah, I think it was like the early 2010s.
That sounds correct.
Chris, what do you feel about Tarantino? Why did you want to talk about him?
Well, I think he's peculiar for a couple of reasons. I also think he's very funny. You know, he has a lot of little tropes that he uses in his movies that seem to recur. I think there is also this running theory that a lot of his films take place in the same universe. And that I thought was really cool because there are several artists who will do things like that, be they authors or like filmmakers or... And I think one of them is Stephen King. Stephen King also kind of does that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
we will talk about in a later episode.
Yes, we will.
As soon as I read one of his books.
Yeah. So I like Tarantino, I think, because the first film that I saw of his was Pulp Fiction.
I've seen that too. Okay. Yeah. I've seen more than one of his
You've
movies.
Probably seen... Yeah, he's pretty...
But I've never seen Kill... He only has 9 movies.
Yeah. They're like all cult classics, all of
yeah,
them.
Yeah,
I don't think I've seen Kill Bill. I think I've seen Django Unchained. I've seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I've seen True Romance, which is like an old one from 93, which is the year that I was born.
Wow.
Yeah, he did Inglourious Basterds and a bunch of other ones. But yeah, he's a weird guy.
Well, so when I was researching him, I was actually surprised by how few films he's done.
Yeah. Because you've heard his name. You've heard his name, like,
everywhere.
Mentioned all the time.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think he also acts, like, I know he's in his own films.
Yes.
But I think he's also been in other people's films. Anyway, so I really liked Pulp Fiction. It was super fucking weird. But I think I kind of fell in love with just the absurdity of the comedy and how explosive the whole movie felt. Like,
yeah.
You really never know what is going to happen next. And also, he has a weird obsession with feet.
I noticed that, but that's true.
It definitely rears its head in Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, so, there's that scene in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood where her feet are on the dashboard, right?
Yes, and they are disgusting. Her feet are disgusting. There's no way that girl's feet actually look like that. Those had to be like, they had to have prosthetic calluses.
They had
to dirty up those feet.
Yeah, because that's that girl is Margaret Qualley, and she's Andy McDowell's daughter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so her mom's a very famous actress as well. But she's a cutie. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
She's like
and
our
she's
age,
great.
But she's, I think she's, was so good in that. Yeah.
Completely agree. So when did you see this? Did you see this in theaters?
Did I see it in theaters? It came out in November?
Yes.
Last year. I think I did see it in theaters then.
I did too. I saw it at the Logan.
With my parents.
Chicago. Oh, you saw it with your folks? That's cool.
Yeah. I remember it. Okay, so for me, it's just such an interesting concept. The whole film, you know? It's this setting of a very famous murder, right? The Manson family murders.
Yes.
It's this time in Hollywood where everything is very glamorous and the stars are young and hot, and you have Sharon Tate, played by Margot Robbie, who's an up-and-coming actress, and then you have Roman Polanski, who's of course a very famous director. Juxtaposed onto that is this end of career Leo DiCaprio, right?
And
end of career Brad Pitt, who are these good buddies. And that's what the beginning quote I read was about these two guys who work so closely together and are so close in the process, but one is being paid to be there.
Yeah.
And, like, what does that mean for their relationship? And what does that mean for the end of their relationship, right? Because part of the premise of the film is that Leo can't afford Brad Pitt anymore as his, like, man, essentially.
Yeah, which right? is really weird also because Brad Pitt's character is literally living in a trailer on the movie set and, like, clearly can't afford to have his own home and, like,
right.
is basically this, yeah, like you say, like, end of career stunt double who is now a chauffeur for Leo DiCaprio's character.
Yeah, a chauffeur, a gopher, a friend, like a confidant, anything,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
He does anything that he can for this guy because he needs the money.
Yeah. And there's so much of this is like a very close-up look at all of these different elements of Hollywood, right? Mm-hmm. From like the starving late artist to true crime, and it's everything that people who like Hollywood don't want to see about Hollywood.
Right. It's kind of the seedy underside of it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. And then the Manson element. It's all crazy.
Yeah. I thought Margot Robbie did a brilliant job as Sharon Tate. And also, I was so surprised. Who is the guy who plays Charlie Manson? Because he looks just fucking like him.
I don't know who played Charlie Manson, but Tex Watson was played by Austin Butler, and he did an amazing job as well.
Yeah, this is a tremendous cast. It opens with, like you say, two real big name actors, and also, is it Scorsese? Who the fuck is that at the beginning of the film?
Yeah, I think it is.
It's super beautifully done. And it's very long, just like totally in the fashion of Quentin Tarantino. Like,
oh my God, yeah.
Sprawl, the story just sort of like continues to sprawl too far. You wonder when it's going to reach its fever pitch. And
there is kind of what the... There wasn't a plot.
Right,
I know.
There's nothing at all. You're just like, where did this come from and where is it going?
Yes.
But you're also like, for some reason, just kind of drawn into it. Every new person who enters on the screen, you're just like, oh, that's this person. There's
right.
a ton of big name actors, and then there's also this really young, who is that little girl?
Yeah, Julia, whatever, Butters or Butler or something
yeah,
like that.
She's yeah, she's amazing. Like,
she was so cute.
Everything about her encounter with Leonardo DiCaprio's character, Rick Dalton, he's supposed
yes.
to be based on Steve McQueen.
So yeah.
So he's supposed
yeah, yeah.
to represent that sort of, that era and that style of, like, spaghetti western star.
Mm-hmm.
But he encounters this young girl who is, you get the image of, like, a little girl who's very, very literate and takes no shit. And she even mentions, like, I don't really like nicknames, but I guess I'll let it slide this time. Just has, she's very precocious. She has a vocabulary well beyond her years and is forced to interact with this guy who has no, it appears, no self-awareness.
Right.
Has, you know, is probably undiagnosed with some major mental illness, has an obvious, I can't remember now, is it a drug problem or a drinking problem?
I think it's a drinking problem.
Yeah, like he's a huge alcoholic and
yeah,
it's just really wonderful in all of the ways that Quentin Tarantino loves to portray people, which is as the most aggressive version of whatever their biggest characteristic is. Dalton's character is like incredibly self-absorbed. Brad Pitt's character is just cool. Like, he's just cool with everything. Like,
yeah.
Nothing bothers him at all. It's almost like if this was a comic book of Hollywood, but in a film.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. It's Or yeah. It's like those episodes on the Disney Channel from when we were younger where it was like The Sweet Life at Waverly Place, you know, where it's yes. like a crossover between two shows, or like Hannah Montana's So Raven or whatever, yeah. where they're like all in it together. That's what it feels like, right? It's like all of these different people who are like probably connected, but you don't normally see them connected, right? Right,
and otherwise would not be, except for Once Upon a Time when they were in a film which right. it seems has no genre, because mm-hmm. it is partly true crime but also historical fiction but also spaghetti western itself and but also drama, and it's Quentin Tarantino refuses to land on something, but in a way that none of us are bothered by.
Right, I don't yeah. know,
it's just, like, so cool. And then the soundtrack itself is just, like, a bunch of actual songs from
yep.
from the 70s, from the height of hippie Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And they're all songs that we know because they're played on the oldies station, but there's covers of big songs by other popular artists of the time. It's just, like, a weird film, and I don't know. It's just weird.
It is weird. And I mean, this goes back to what we said before. All of his films are pretty weird. Like, I go back to thinking about Django Unchained, which is this story of abolition and a freed slave and all of this, like, crazy violence. Because that's another yes. hallmark of his movies.
Yes, but also seem to always really funny. Like, Django Unchained was also funny for no reason. Why is it funny? Why is this movie funny? Like,
right.
Why is Once Upon a Time funny? It's just incredibly violent.
I remember it once I was thinking about it, like, oh yeah, I've seen Django Unchained, and that's a Tarantino and, like, Pulp Fiction and everything. They're so bloody. This oh, yeah. movie at the end was incredibly bloody. At the end, I was like, was all of this necessary? And it's not, but, like, that's just his style, right? Like, that's just kind of how he does things.
Yeah, he violence is a huge part of it, and also, like, pastiche. So he likes, he says that he steals from every movie he's ever seen, yeah. and he's unabashed about that. I do want to talk about, like, why it's weird that violence is funny in this situation.
Well, can I just,
it might not be.
Yeah, can I say one thing about him? So yes. when I was doing research on him, I also found a lot of the controversies that he's been part of, and one of them is in regards to gun violence. He has stated openly that he does not believe violence in films and video games and pop culture leads to an increase in violence.
In real life.
In real life, yeah.
Right.
I just don't know offhand the stats on that, but I would feel that normalized violence would make it more common in life.
I think it would pass the sniff test, right? It would make me at least want to, like, do a little bit of research on it. But I think I have looked into it, and I don't know that violent video games actually increase the risk of violence for, the majority of the population. I watch his films, and I'm not. I have
a violent person,
propensity
yeah.
toward violence. And so I think that phenomenon on its own is interesting, but I don't know that it is, like, I don't know that it's film or anything else that would set that type of a person off, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
nobody's
going to
go
true.
From
that's
being
true.
Totally normal to, like, a psychopath just because they watch a Quentin Tarantino film.
Yes, that's very true. So why do you think the violence in this case is so humorous?
I mean, partly because we are not meant to take it seriously. Like, we know the story of Sharon Tate. We know who Charles Manson is and how he co-opted a peaceful movement to make it all about himself and then take down, literally murder people who didn't want him to be famous or whatever.
Right.
Like, we know this story, and so we know that Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time, and even from the title, we know that it's not true. For one, it's not threatening us in the mm-hmm. way that true violence might threaten, mm-hmm. but it still uses that element of maybe fear or the unexpected to build the suspense in the movie. So,
yeah.
like, every different character who jumps in is a different catalyst for what eventually becomes a boiling pot of blood and guts and shotguns.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think part of it is the absurdity, right? Like, this is not a kind yeah. of violence that we hear about even on a semi-regular basis. So right. to think, like, oh my gosh, these people went into the wrong house. There just so happened to be this guy who's, like, really strong, and he was a little drunk, and he had a gun, and it's and all of these... And also
there was a pit bull.
Yeah, it's, like, just the perfect character. Yeah.
Right.
It's, like, the perfect storm to be this kind of absurdist violence. Yeah, that's how I thought of it, of, like, oh, it's almost like the shock factor that makes it funny.
Yes. Okay, so there are, like, two or three things I would like to say about philosophy of humor, which there's not a lot that philosophers say about humor, probably because even philosophers recognize that the more that you talk about a joke and why it's funny, the less funny it is.
So, yeah.
You know, they're not saying a whole lot about it, but there's three pretty important theories around the art of humor mm-hmm. and what makes something laughable. The first is from Roger Scruton, who proposes the superiority theory, which is that when we laugh at something, it is because we're either laughing at others or a former version of ourselves that we believe we are now superior to. Laughter, in one sense, devalues the object of what it laughs at.
Oh, like, interesting.
Yeah. So then this, though, isn't super fulfilling, right? Because it doesn't acknowledge other reasons why we laugh. It's only one type of laughter that this is talking about. Because we also laugh at things like turn of phrase and figures of speech or play on words.
Well, there's clever humor as well. That's not necessarily degrading anyone, you know?
Right. No, completely. This, in one sense, like Tarantino's films devalue violence because they make them farcical.
Yeah.
So, like, there's one way in which it's funny. The second theory of humor, which was sort of a response to the first theory, is relief theory, which is the idea that humor is this pressure valve that, like, releases all of this pent-up, built-up frustration and all of the things that happen in your daily life. And there's one specific philosopher, which is Lord Shaftesbury, a.k.a. the 7th Earl of Shaftesbury, or Anthony Ashley Cooper. He had an essay written in 1709 titled Freedom of Wit and Humor. And he says, quote, "The natural free spirits of ingenious men, if imprisoned or controlled, will find out other ways of motion to relieve themselves in their constraint. And whether it be in burlesque, mimicry, or buffoonery, they will be glad at any rate to vent themselves and be revenged upon their constrainers." So, I think that's... Think about how, like, tons of people who have all kinds of emotional buildup, one of the ways that you can diffuse that is to say something absurd to make them laugh.
Like, yeah, that's true.
It releases a bunch of other stressors. And then the third theory, which is like the third and final, is this idea of incongruity, which is sort of what you were saying with something being so absurd, and like that it violates what you expect. It violates your expectations. Last quote is from Kant, and mm-hmm. he says, "In everything that is to excite a lively, convulsive laugh, there must be something absurd, in which the understanding, therefore, can find no satisfaction. Laughter is an affection arising from the sudden transformation of a strained expectation into nothing." I mean, that's why, like, some of the best stand-up comedians, for example, they'll lead you down a trail, they'll act like they're going one way, and then the punchline is something totally other.
Yes, exactly. So,
and I think that Tarantino masters that incongruity is, like, a huge part of his filmmaking.
Totally. And you know what? You're exactly right. It's what makes his films humor as opposed to drama or action or thriller.
Yeah. He's a very unique person in that he can make a drug overdose funny. He can make, like, murder funny. Mm-hmm. And in a way that none of us want to go out and overdose on cocaine or...
Right.
murder our friends, but, like, right. for some reason we're sitting there laughing and unable to stop ourselves.
Right. And you know what? He himself is a very interesting person because he is still so serious. In his acceptance speech, he won several awards for Once Upon a Time, or maybe they won two awards, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood did. But he got up there and he gave a speech about climate change. And he took on this, like, very, very serious tone, which is, like, there's nothing wrong with that, but it seemed so incongruous with what he was doing, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, obviously he's an advocate for climate change, or like against climate change and protecting the world for our future generations and everything.
Could you imagine, though, if he was an advocate for climate change?
He is an advocate for climate change, and it's so incongruous with everything you know.
yes.
Oh my gosh. No, that's exactly it. It felt like it came out of left field, you know?
Yeah.
Awesome. Anything else?
All right. No, I don't have anything else to add then. That should be good.
Okay, so the list that I have for us today is Quentin Tarantino's last movie, 17 unmade projects that could be his final film, and it is on IndieWire.com. Did you see this? So the first potential film that could be Tarantino's last film, so apparently he said that he will retire from filmmaking after 10 movies, and he's on his 9th with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and so after that he's gonna probably go more towards playwriting or writing books, something like that. He still says he has a lot of creativity left, but he's done with these kind of like big box office films.
Okay.
So one potential project is called Killer Crow. It would be a spinoff from Inglourious Basterds that would take parts from Inglourious Basterds that were cut from the script and kind of turn that into a screenplay that would have some of the same characters.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Inglourious Basterds is another great film that is funny but shouldn't be because of when it takes place. Number two, Double V Vega would be a prequel to Pulp Fiction.
Interesting.
Yes. The idea being for John Travolta and Michael Madsen to reprise their characters. But it might not work anymore. Why wouldn't it work anymore?
Oh, because they wouldn't be able to... This would have had to happen a long time ago when John Travolta and Michael Madsen were still young enough to play, like, earlier versions of themselves.
Yes.
And that's just Travolta kind of not... Yeah. They're old.
Yeah, he should let himself go.
Like, I would agree with that.
He got a lot of work done. He looks like he's made out of...
plastic?
Cement. Yeah.
For sure.
Not in a good place. Nah. All right, go ahead.
The next one is Kill Bill Volume 3. So this would be another follow-up to the Kill Bill franchise, in which the daughter of the person killed by Uma Thurman would come after her.
Oh, that would be cool.
It would kind of be cool.
Interesting. Yeah, he works with Uma Thurman a lot. Because she was also in Pulp Fiction, and she was in another one.
Yeah, she's been in a lot, but I don't know that they're on great terms at
great
the
terms
moment.
Anymore? Yeah. Why? What happened?
Drama. Because of the Harvey Weinstein stuff.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why? Did Tarantino weigh in on that?
Well, apparently some of his actresses had reported to him abuses by Weinstein, and he said he confronted Weinstein, but he never, like, brought it to authorities or anything.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's just a little messy.
That's scummy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, number four is an untitled horror movie.
Okay.
Which, because according to Tarantino, he says, if I come up with a terrific horror film story, I will do that as my 10th film. Basically because he's never done a horror film and he loves them.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So the next one is an R-rated Star Trek, which apparently the script already exists. And he said he might revisit this script once all of the buzz from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood would die down.
All right, what number are we on?
I don't know.
It doesn't matter. Next is a 1930s gangster movie, which it looks like he has yet to do anything. The closest he's gotten to that is probably Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
But like even just looking at this image that they use from Warner Bros. That's in this essay or listicle from IndieWire. Mm-hmm. I like am thinking of Leo DiCaprio as
the
guy who's got
type.
A gun pointed to pointing to the other guy's head. So anyway, Tarantino said that he's considered doing a crime film, but he's never thought about doing like a gangster drama full blown. So, but he always liked those like film noir style.
Yeah, I could see him, like, really enjoying those. And the next one would be kind of like a spinoff of Django Unchained. It would be a John Brown biopic, who was the famous abolitionist who appeared
in Django.
In Django, yeah. And so he says, my favorite hero in American history is John Brown. He's my favorite American who ever lived. He basically single-handedly started the road to end slavery and the fact that he killed people to do it. He decided if we start spilling white blood, then they're going to start getting the idea. Which I think speaks volumes about who Tarantino is, that that's his idea of a hero. The violence aspect being a huge part of it.
You know, not super related, but there is a moment in Django Unchained that I wanted to talk about earlier and didn't. Leonardo DiCaprio cuts his hand on something in the scene, but it's all done in like one long take, and so they like didn't stop the film, they just kept it going. And this literally happened to Orson Welles during the filming of Citizen Kane, which is one of the greatest movies ever made. He like cut his hand on something in the middle of having an explosive fit, and it was like a long shot take, and he just left it in there because he didn't want to have to redo the take again.
Yeah.
Another way in which
he kind of
Tarantino steals.
Yeah, mimics. Because that was Citizen Kane, you said?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Okay, sorry. Anyway, back to the list. The next one is... Oh, here it is. An adaptation of his upcoming World War II book. So apparently Tarantino is writing a novel about World War II veterans. And he was thinking of later creating a film out of that. A film adaptation.
I could see that happening.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. Would it be funny? Who's to say?
Who's to say?
We will have to find out.
Yeah. The next one is The Psychic. And so this would be a remake of one of his favorite psychological horror films, which is The Psychic by Lucio Fulci. It's a 1977 film that...
I have never seen that.
I haven't either, but apparently he used a lot of the music from the original Psychic in Kill Bill.
Oh.
Yeah.
This also says... that he wanted Jackie Brown, which was another film of his that I have seen, and I forgot that was a Tarantino. That's a great movie if you haven't seen it. He wanted Bridget Fonda to be in a remake of The Psychic.
Oh.
So that would be kind of cool.
That would be cool.
All right, the next one, because I don't know what number. Number the next one.
Yeah.
Luke Cage, Hero for Hire.
Oh, yeah. So sorry, this is related to this. Something that I read about when looking up Quentin Tarantino, he's long been a Marvel fan. He's a huge comic book guy.
Oh,
so this would be related to that.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Wait, so who is Luke Cage? Why don't I know what that is?
Luke Cage is kind of a superhero. It's a comic book along the same lines of like Jessica Jones. If you're familiar with Jessica Jones, they're normal people, but they... fight crime and have a shady past and all of that kind of thing.
He's
a superhero in that he kind of has like super strength. Oh, the next one is The Berlin Game, which would be an adaptation of Len Deighton's spy trilogy made up of The Berlin Game, Mexico Set, and London Match. And again, this could be kind of a loophole in that it would be probably three films rather than one film for his last story.
Like a three-parter, basically.
Yeah.
What a way to go out. Next one would be a possible James Bond, which would be, according to this article, the 26th Bond movie that had ever been made. I guess he had said previously that he was interested in remaking Casino Royale. I guess he said that after he made Kill Bill. Interesting.
Oh,
I did not know that.
Me either. Next, we have an erotic film. So apparently he said he already has an idea for an erotic film. And it would be kind of like the sex films of the 70s that are basically softcore porn.
Yeah. Interesting.
Weird
guy. I guess he kind of alludes to like... He's into kink, you know. We already know he's got a foot thing. There's probably some other things he's into maybe he shouldn't do that because there's maybe some things that the world doesn't need to know about you, Quentin.
Yeah, but just hold back for once.
Just you should have something private. Like something should be private. The next one on the list is 40 Lashes Less One, which is a book by Elmore Leonard. Is this true? And then he has his Jackie Brown was an adaptation of a book written by Elmer Leonard. And I think...
So next we have a Django Zorro crossover. which apparently was a graphic novel series, and so he would just be adapting that into a film.
That would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
I love that idea of crossovers. I don't know why I think it's so funny. Because, like, it's impossible to do it, to have two things that cross over that perfectly align and that don't leave any plot holes,
right,
you know?
Right, right.
So, I've always thought it was interesting how different directors and writers make that work.
Yeah.
The next one on the list would be Bounty Law. Which is the fictional, you know, the fictional series that, what's his face?
Leo DiCaprio is in.
Yeah, that his character is, like, the star of in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So
that would be,
I could totally see that being done, too. And it would be just so funny. But, like, the reason it would be funny would be because Leo's character takes himself very seriously.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
The films themselves are not supposed to be funny. So watching them, you're like, oh, this is great.
Yeah. And then finally, perhaps something more original and more epilogue-y. Apparently is his own quote, meaning that he would do something totally original and kind of reflective of his own career as a director.
Oh, like autobiographical or just...
Kind of, yeah. Not quite a biopic, but something that has, you know, themes
something
from
once
his
upon a time
own... Yeah.
About himself.
Yeah.
Writing himself into his own universe.
Classic.
All right, well, that's...
That's what we
all
got.
That we have. That's the total list. And then, Sarah, do you want me to read the coffee bean?
Yeah, go for it.
Awesome. So our coffee bean of the week is that fair trade coffee improves quality. So fair trade coffee costs more, but the coffee farmers spend at least 25% of the fair trade premium to enhance productivity and quality. And over the last 3 years specifically, fair trade certified coffee products have won 28 Great Taste Awards.
Ooh, that's impressive. Mm. So that means it's making a difference. Wonderful. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. As always, we appreciate you.
Please email us at coffeelosophy2018@gmail.com if you have suggestions, corrections, anything you want to say, praise, if you want to make fun of us, go right
correct
ahead.
Us.
We'll maybe do an episode of that.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah.
You can
or
find
if you
us...
want to be on the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Or have ideas of what we should talk about. You can
more
find
pictures.
Us on coffeelosophy.blog.
You can find us on our website. Oh, that is our website. You can listen to us on Spotify and on Stitcher and on Apple Podcasts. And
we are on Instagram.
Yes, we are. At Coffee Philosophy Podcast.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much for listening. Ciao.
Ciao, ciao, ciao. Coffee, 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 coffee